PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is, I believe, a very popular guest on the show. He is a man of innovation. He's got a C on his hat. I'm still confident it's for Canada and not for Cobra.
It is.
But we love to call him Master Mike Yagley. Yags, welcome back.
Daniel, it's great to be here. And to all you legendary golfers out there, I can hardly wait to discuss stuff.
It is so hard to get through this intro when you're sitting there giggling, but I feel like it's good content, so we're going to let it ride, you know?
Yeah, that's fine. You're going to get a lot of giggles today.
Am I? Well, you don't even know what I'm going to make you talk about.
That's a good point. I'll figure out a way to giggle through this anyway.
Okay. Well, it's major week. I'm sure you guys are excited about that, to digest it. How are things progressing now that we're in the fifth month of the year and we're seeing some of the dust settle on new product that's been out?
Dust is going well. We're selling a lot of 3D printed irons, which I believe is going to be a topic of discussion today. Future Fit 33 is, I was going to say home run, like a baseball analogy, because I'm a big baseball fan, especially with the fitters. Fitters love it. I mean, once they get over the fear of it, it's a really simple system to use. Believe it or not, it can be intuitive, especially when you're thinking downrange. And they're finding they can fit people a lot better into our products because of that particular component, the Future Fit 33. So they're really digging that. Driver, gapping fairways and hybrids. Yeah.
Are we going to start talking about that, or are we going to talk about the Padres? Because they're doing way better than my Jays are.
Oh, my gosh. So this was a tragedy. So it's Mother's Day, my wife's birthday, and the in-laws come to town, and we do a really nice Mother's Day brunch, and then we go to the Padres game on Monday. And if there's any sports fans out there that really follow baseball, you know the tragedy that happened to the Padres that evening. And my sister-in-law happens to work for the Angels, who was visiting. She's in town, had never been to Petco, Padres ballpark. We've got great seats. We're beating him up pretty much the whole game. Our closer comes in. He gives up like four walks. So he's then another walk, and the game is tied suddenly. They bring in another guy because he can't throw a strike. Our closer, Suarez, just cannot throw a strike to save his soul. And the kid gets one out. It's Jacob. Gets one out. And then he gives up a freaking grand slam to their worst hitter statistically that was in the game. And we lose the game. It was so sad. I couldn't believe it.
Do you ever feel like things happened like time-wise for a reason? Because this just happened to the Jays last night. Junior Cameron Arrow is apparently the next greatest thing ever because he hit a salami off of Hoffman, who also apparently loves to throw strikes down the pipe to every hitter. So
what a disaster. It really was. It was so depressing. But then last night we're watching the game and Tatis hits a walk-off two-run home run to win the game.
I like that.
He's a really good player. You know who else? We're watching the game and I'm telling you right now, we may have three future Hall of Famers. That Manny Machado, people, you know, love, hate, but the dude's really good. Tatis is just magical. You know who's really, really, really special? Is Jackson Merrill in center field.
Merrill, yeah.
Oh my God, he's batting like 460 something right now. He made two spectacular catches. He's just a stud. Yeah. He's so much fun to watch, and you can tell he loves the game. Yeah.
Well, listen, we're going to save the folks. Maybe we'll jump back into it at the end, but I have a feeling they're here to talk. They're here about golf.
Sure.
And to do it. So the last time I had you on the show, we had talked a little bit about Future Fit 33, how much I loved it in concept because I hadn't had a chance to try it for myself. Since then, I've been to the golf shops. I've hit it for myself. And I was thrilled to report to you that, not only is the fitting system easy, I did one of those things where you just try and figure it out on your own, which is probably the worst thing you could do with Future Fit because it's so dynamic. And then as soon as I gave up on that and looked at the chart, I was like, oh, I just put it here. I've got a friend hitting at the time, and I wanted to get his ball elevated a little bit, and I wanted to get it going left a little bit. So I found that spot in the chart, put it in there, and the first thing he does is basically hit that window on the track, man. I was like, yeah, okay, so I guess it works all right, you know? And,
yeah.
And he's officially, like, obsessed with your driver, so that's really cool.
That is awesome.
But I also noticed we got through that, and what I did is I went on my cell phone and just pulled up the chart because it's super easy to find.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't realize is flip the other direction right beside the bay is this awesome little element you guys have provided to your fitters or to your the retailers that shows the chart right there for you to use if you want to use it. So not only can you get your phone out and put it on the driver itself, but you also have these elements around the USA or anywhere that the retail wise that are selling it, that it's so visual that it takes no time to figure out. And I love that. So I just wanted to really kick off the show by saying, yeah, okay, maybe what you said is pretty true.
Okay. Thank you. Right? Alex, for the entire team, my innovation team that came up with the concept, that would be Clayton Evans, Zach Majors, who grounded out in design, and the marketing people upstairs that like brought it to life from a visual standpoint, we all say thank you.
Should you be like holding a trophy while this is going on? I would like to thank my parents, and, maybe the Morgan Cup. There we go.
I told you we had to work this in somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's this thing called the Morgan Cup. Yeah. It's a fun thing.
Oh, man. That's awesome. Yeah. Anyways, I just thought it'd be really fun to celebrate that because, I mean, I saw it firsthand. And you talk about these things and attempt to apply them at absolutely the best way possible to support the consumer. And as soon as I saw the chart, everything tracked. Like, everything made sense. Yeah. And it's explained if you actually apply what's on the driver do that. So yeah, I really enjoyed that. But I don't think that's what we need to talk about today, Yeggs. I think we got bigger conversations to have.
All right. That's fine.
Are you down?
I'll go anywhere you want to go. I'll go anywhere you want to go.
So the thing I think is most curious about your role is you mm-hmm. have to balance between what you can talk about now, where you've come from the past to get to this point, and what you guys are already talking about for, I assume, 26, 27, 28, and those releases, which I've seen your face when you're excited about something like, hey, I know you like this, but get ready for next year kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What is that like as a balancing act? How do you manage that?
Well, it's tough. I mean, first, you have to make sure you're really cognizant of just like the names of the products. Right? Like there is, and I think I've explained this before. So I'm looking at my group, the innovation team. We'll have a code name for something, some, you know, cheeky way to describe what the tech is. And it's, you know, some really fun way to express it in terms of this is the code name for it. Okay. And then it moves over into the design innovation or design and engineering team under Doug Roberts, and they'll have a code name for it. And then eventually it becomes a product. And that has potentially a different name. So there could be three different names for the same product. And so in my head right now are the current products, the stuff that's coming out next year, which has an innovation and an engineering design engineering code name, and the stuff that's coming out in like 27 and 28, which some of them have innovation and design engineering code names, and some just have innovation code names. So there's like potentially four or five code names running around in my head for a particular product. Like, let's say we're going to make a next generation 3DP tour, just for example. Okay, there's three names in my head just for that one club. Yeah.
So
got to keep that straight. And then there's the tech that's going in, right? Because as great as these 3DP tour irons are, we are going to make them better. Period. And they're really great right now. That's the fun thing. So as you were describing, like, you know, what goes on in your head and when you're talking about stuff, the cool thing is the 3DP toured iron is still so new and its distribution is still relatively limited. I get to talk about it as if a lot of people haven't seen it yet. And there's a lot of people listening in that truly have not seen it yet, have not had a chance to hit it because it's just getting out there. I mean, the production of these things is we've gotten to the point where we can make them in mass, but it's not as prolific or as abundant as casting or forging. I mean, we're producing them, but we can cast a hell of a lot more iron heads faster than we can 3D print them at this point.
Yeah, I know we've sort of stepped through these conversations in the past. It's sort of a primer to my next question, which is for something like 3D printing that is still in a lot of ways in its infancy in the golf world, certainly you've done a lot to get to where you have got to at this point. But as you work through that sort of future state of it, I'm trying to balance this in a way that I can, and I could get a better understanding for you. Mm-hmm. These changes that have made, like the first time we talked about 3D printing, it was a challenge and not so many people were doing it, but it was rapidly changing, right? Now you're talking mm-hmm. about producing en masse, which was always a conversation that was a challenge. So what is that like from this type of innovation that's not just readily available everywhere? Is there a ramp up period, and especially in innovation, how quickly do you have to shift on the fly when suddenly things are unlocked that weren't unlocked 6 months ago, a year ago?
So the first part of that question, I'll answer it this way. 4 or 5 years ago, there were not what I would call print farms. We'd walk into a large room and there might be 25 metal 3D printers or additive manufacturing machines. That just didn't exist. Now there are multiple locations where there are numerous. Those are two big words, right? So multiple locations where you walk in and there might be 40 metal 3D printing machines available. Now they're not all available for us because there's other products that are being printed. So the capacity has increased immensely. Like some of our suppliers that cast and forge, when we talked to them a couple of years ago, they're like, yeah, no, we might buy a 3D printer, right? Just for prototyping and, you know, to speed the prototyping process up. Less than a year ago, we told them what our plan was and they said, yes, we're on board and we're going to secure 3D printing capacity. I go over to Asia with Yasu Oba and Doug Roberts. So Yasu's the head of operations, Doug's the head of design and engineering, and they parade us around to rather large print farms, which was freaking amazing. And so now they're on board. And I've said it this way, it's like, is 3D printing going to like be the future? No, 3D printing is going to be part of the future. It is a future. Do I think casting is going to be eliminated? Probably not. Forging? No. But 3D printing of irons, especially, well, and other components, but especially when you can do things that you can't do with forging and casting, is going to be a big part of the future. It just is. These things are just too damn good not to keep doing it and to keep experimenting with how we can make them better, working with vendors to, and their machines, because they're, I'm babbling for a second, but in the past 5 years, they've gone from like, one laser that's tracing the powder and fusing it or melting it or sintering it, whatever you want to call it, right, to 16 lasers or technology where they're printing not just points, but areas simultaneously. And that increases the rate at which you're printing these things, the capacities of the machines. Like I talked to a guy yesterday, he's talking like 100-fold. Compared to the capacity of machines like 5 years ago. I mean, that's really rapid improvement. And that's what's happening in this space, which makes sense. Yeah.
It seems very reactionary, which I think makes sense. I mean, you don't want to take mm-hmm. a massive risk on something that's unproven, but once you start to see the value of it, then obviously you're getting the reaction that you've had. So, what's that like to sit back? Is there a little bit of like a cheeky, I told you, or is it like just the thrill of knowing that your concepts are becoming more of a reality for more golfers?
Oh, it's both. It's both. I love that we have created something that is unlike anything that has ever existed for like that category, for an MB shape or for a forged cavity back, more of a player sort of blade, those two shapes to begin with. I mean, this, and it's not hyperbole, we have had players switch from playing a forged blade, so like Gary Woodland, Kyle Westmoreland, Danny Levitz. I'm looking out at a great poster of Angel Hidalgo, who was the first player to put the 3DP Tours in play and win with them. And actually, he played the Limited, which was last year. Huge poster outside my office, because I'm like, I want that guy on my wall. He's the poster child, literally. These players switched within, like, some of them that day. They would hit it and go, yeah, I'm putting that in play. We got pictures of players who threw all their other irons on the ground and said, yeah, these aren't going back in the bag. That just doesn't happen. Well, I added all up.
Tour level, I agree.
No.
At the tour level, that's significant. And
yeah. Yeah.
I have so many directions I want to go in with this, but I'm going to start with the most obvious. And let me have this moment, because I think it's really curious that we've seen significant changes in the golf industry very few times, like deeply impactful changes. We see subtle engagement with these certain things. And I'll give you a good example. When you started 3D printing elements into an iron, I thought that was really cool. It's like, okay, this is a subtle change to a very functional iron using a new technology. We see a lot of that type of stuff in golf. But there are only so many of those like significant moments where a product wildly exceeds its predecessor, if you know what I mean. So,
oh yeah.
Do you feel like from a tour blade standpoint or an MB muscle back profile, we're sort of redefining that potential?
Totally. Absolutely redefining it. And you talk about those moments, and again, I've used the word hyperbole a couple times in the past couple of weeks. It's like, you know, Titleist for a long time didn't think anybody was ever going to play anything other than a wound golf ball. Wound, right? You can find it in the history. Companies start coming out with solid golf balls. They're like, holy crap, we got to do something. And they were in the middle of doing something, but they had to really accelerate it. And almost overnight, everyone switches from a wound golf ball with urethane cover to a solid construction, because it was that much better, that remarkable. That's like my favorite word now. I hear all these engineers saying it right now. It's like, it's remarkable. To me, remarkable is something that within a few hits, and it could be the feel thing, it could be the extra launch angle, it could be the consistency or forgiveness, but at some point in the middle of a hit session, somebody's going to turn around and go, man, this thing's, they'll say something like, unexpected. I can't believe how forgiving it is. I can't believe how good it feels. Didn't you say this thing isn't forged? Why is it the ball's getting up so easy? Especially with the long irons. They're going to say something. Now, I say that, it's funny. I'm looking out at Drew Whited, who's one of our engineers who's working hard in this whole project, and he's got some stuff I wish I could tell you about. but he's out on the tour, and he's working with all the players, and he goes, Gary Woodland doesn't miss. It took like Gary 20 minutes to figure out what this thing was, because he didn't freaking miss a shot. You know, if you're hitting it right in the middle, it's going to behave, especially with the shorter irons, middle shorter irons, it's going to behave a lot like a forged blade. But then he finally misses one. He goes, whoa, 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 what's this? Right? Then he gets the long irons. He's like, whoa, these fly way higher. These are really good. And he was in love. He was one of the ones who literally sent us the picture with his irons all over the ground saying, they ain't going back in the bag. So where I'm promising most players are going to notice it quickly in a hit session. Tour players, sometimes it takes just a little bit longer because they're so freaking good.
Yeah.
But so they do notice. Yeah.
That's actually a conversation that is, I'm having a different one right now on THP. We're talking about drivers and the expectations that drivers make you infinitely better or can potentially make you infinitely better or hit the ball further. And I've believed for a couple of years that there are levels of limitations that a lot of companies have hit. And now they've understood that it's not necessarily about hitting it further. It's about hitting it better in every scenario where you're away from the center of the head. Like, people do not talk enough about forgiveness on a head.
No.
We're seeing it with Max K for you guys. Like, it's all highly present, but people aren't looking for that. They're still doing the on the button bomb that they all need to talk about. It's like, I just had a conversation with a guy the other day. I'm like, how hard did you have to work? We're talking about shafts, so it's slightly different, but like, how hard did you have to work to hit that perfect shot with that setup? He's like, oh, well, pretty hard. And then we found a shaft that he put in play, and every time we went back to it, within a shot, he was already hitting good quality shots versus this other shaft where he had to hit five or six to get a good one. It's like, dude, everything about that doesn't make any sense other than you're playing launch monitor golf right now for the one big win. So I want to bring that all back around and saying, I feel like the target market is super fascinating here because you're talking about the guys that don't miss. You're talking about the guys that need and hone in on very finite elements to either love or hate about a product. So to get something like this in their hands and then not to do one of my favorite looks, the Paris Hilton nose up, scrunchy face. At it, like that's a wild thing. It's that has to be so hard to get there. Does it surprise you that you're already there?
No. And so back to the second part of your other question, which dovetails into this one, the I told you so, right? I'm looking out at my guys again. Hell, in 2019, they said, look, we are really sure that we're going to be able to make an iron that we are going to be able to afford to sell. Speaking of code names, the code name at that moment was Bob Barker because the price is right. Right. And I actually changed the code name, and they may still hate me for it, to Apollo, because at one point somebody said something like, you know, hey, we're not doing this because it's easy. We're doing this because it's hard. I went, JFK, right? In front of a whole bunch of college students. What university was it? Tulane? We choose not to go to the moon because it's easy. We choose because it's hard, right? It's the right thing to do. So, oh, the damn thing's Apollo. So that stuck. So even that one had like two code names within innovation. So the moment of like, not so much I told you so, but just the, you know, guys, just listen to us once in a while. Jose Miraflor, who you know I love dearly, right? Him, a couple other guys, you're like, I don't know. I don't know if we want to do 3D printed irons and putters and stuff like that. Now they can't get enough of them. You should see the architecture, which is like our long-term plan. There could be a significant amount of 3D printing on that architecture. And it wasn't necessarily there a couple of years ago. Yeah.
I mean, listen, I have had my head sort of locked in on limited when it comes to 3D printing. There's an understanding that at this current moment, or maybe 6 months ago, a year ago, the term limited was required when you talked about 3D printing. You tell me there's a chance that could not be so limited in the future?
Yeah, well, look at the cat's already out of the bag with the 3DP tour, right?
Fair.
We started with let's make 500 sets globally. And now we're like, no, let's release something very similar to that iron out in the wild, 3DP tour. We have it in probably over 100 doors right now. People can go on the website and go to the fitting section. There is a specific button for 3DP tour. So if you're trying to find that puppy, you can. So click on that. And again, they're not everywhere, but I'd like to believe they're within a reasonable driving distance of just about everybody who's listening in right now. Hmm. Okay. And they'll be able to find them, be able to hit them. And here's the talk. I don't know if I call it serendipity or just, you know, unexpected results or consequences. Now we'll say results. When we did it, we're like, it's a little smaller than a King Tour. So that limits the audience, right? Because that's kind of a tiny blade compared to, say, a DS Adapt or our Super Game Improvement Irons. We have had so many fitters call us up and go, hey, I fit this guy into DS Adapt or even DS Adapt Max. And just for giggles, near the end of the fit, I had him hit a 3DP tour. And he goes, I couldn't believe it. He hit it better. Like, he actually hit it better, which is contrary to what you would think. And the guy was like an 18 handicap. Now, he didn't pull the trigger for a couple of reasons. One, he's like, I don't know if I can believe it. Even when I see all the data, it's like, I don't know if I really can trust that I can hit an iron this small, that good. And, you know, we get the call. I'm like, why would that be? And truthfully, the mass properties of this thing, the CG is much lower because of that 100 grams we're putting in the heel and the toe and super low, right? Sure, the blade is a little shorter and a little scarier. But the moment of inertia of that thing, and I'm pointing at one because I've got one here in my office, the moment of inertia of that thing is pretty high, even relative to a game improvement iron. It's like it goes past a player's iron and a hollow player's iron all the way to a game improvement iron in terms of its playability. So in hindsight, we're looking at it going, well, yeah, we didn't necessarily design it for the 18 handicap, but they can hit it. And there's one other thing that I think happens, confidence. You look down at that thing, it's sexy, right? And after a couple hits, you're like, shit, I can hit this thing. I can hit this in the middle of the face. I experienced the same thing. I would never play a forged blade again because it just, they look too small to me. But whenever I go in the hit bay and I'm testing forged blades, I hit them fine. I hit them really, really good, like awesome. And I think to myself, why wouldn't I play this on the course, right? And then I'm thinking, well, I do like the forgiveness that the 3DP Tour gives me. I wouldn't want to give that up. I don't want to miss a 9-iron and then miss the green. I want to miss a 9-iron and still be on the green. So I wouldn't switch, but I do get the whole confidence thing. And it's real. It really is. You look down, you like the look of something, that helps a lot.
So yeah. So why, or I guess the question would be, how much are you exploring going the other direction? Because we went into a tour-sized profile.
Mm-hmm.
What do you gain or lose going bigger?
Great question. I'm going to measure my answer. And the answer
is that, of course, based on what's coming or what?
Yeah, we're looking at everything. Okay. I have said this so many times that now my bosses will repeat this to me. And they go, okay, Yagley, we know it's not trivial. It's not trivial. And it wasn't trivial to take a muscle back or a forged like cavity back, like a King Tour, and turn it into a 3D printed iron. That was not a trivial exercise. But the advantage you have there is those things are solid and you can lattice out the inside, which people have probably seen the inside of these things. And it looks like that, right? This is with the face removed and polymer put in there, but there is not a polymer filler. This is just put there so that when somebody actually touches it, they don't cut their fingers because those little lattice legs are sharp. Okay. And then you can see the tungsten. The reason this still feels great is because that lattice touches the back of the face. It touches everywhere else in the cavity. And that reminds me, I need to write down an idea. Hold on for a second.
This is a big moment.
Oh yeah. No, I'm serious.
That we're going to look back at those gigs.
I had an idea the other day and I realized I didn't write it down and I just had to write it down. Okay. So
tell us about it. Come on.
I'm not going to tell you about it. No. So where it wasn't trivial to make this, when you look at it, you're like, well, yeah, if you can get the stiffness you need, so it's going to feel good. Cause that's what makes things feel good. It's like stiff and the frequency is high and the duration of the sound is low. That's why forged blades sound so good. A game improvement iron or a super game improvement iron, it doesn't look like this. It ain't solid. It's hollow. It's a cavity back or it's a hollow with a medallion on the back and the wall structure on it is very thin. So you don't look at that and go, oh yeah, I can lattice the crap out of that. There's plenty of places to lattice. It's harder. It's not trivial. It's not as obvious. And I wouldn't even say the first one was obvious, but will we go that way? We're looking, right? If we can give a player a benefit, and whatever that benefit might be, it could be very similar launch characteristics as a game improvement iron, but way better feel, like stupid better feel. Or it could be we can give you a better feel and some improvement in the launch characteristics. I mean, if there is a reason to do it, we will do it. So I would be lying to you if I were to say we are not looking, because we are. Of course we are. We have to. Shit, we put it in putters, right? We've got it in these irons. We're looking at everything. Be silly not to.
Yeah.
I just can't tell you what it is.
It's just interesting because You mentioned the lack of confidence that someone would have looking down at it. I firmly believe that you can get comfortable with just about any iron you put in front of you as long as you do it for an extended period of time. I understand the shock value, both going smaller or larger. Even heel to toe changes are pretty hard to look down at and be like, yeah, I'm okay with that if you're not familiar. Yeah. So, you know, there's a level of user interaction there that's required to work. But what I wondered was, have you ever thought about having the same sort of profile, just slightly broadened out in the softer lines, the tighter lines, just to give that sort of added bulk to give people more confidence in it?
Oh, yeah. You would love, the next time you're out here, I want you to just sit in on a conversation we have about shaping. It would be friendly arguments. Sometimes it does get heated, and I'm not kidding you, Daniel. We're talking about sometimes it's a millimeter in blade length or in top line. Hell, a half a millimeter in top line thickness. People go ape shit over. It's like, that looks horrible. And you look down, you're like, it's not that different. Come on, dudes. It ain't that different. Yeah.
Depends who you talk to. Blend,
oh, yeah. I mean, it honestly, and you know what's funny? So now I've been in the industry long enough that I can see what they're talking about. I can see it. And like, wow, you're right. And there are times where we go like, I agree. I think that does look like shit. I wouldn't play that. And other times I'm like, come on, they're not really going to notice that. But you look down at an iron like I'm doing right now, I'm looking down at a wedge. And between the blade length and how we call it the par area, where the hosel blends into the rest of the blade and the leading edge relative to the leading edge of the hosel, the offset, right? How it blends from the leading edge into the hosel, top line thickness, the top line shape. Do you remember when we had a polymer top line in our irons?
I sure do.
Right? Okay. So you could give that polymer top line iron to 1,000 people, and every single one of them are going to say, the one with the black polymer, every single one is going to say that is thinner than the one sitting right next to it. You could measure the crap out of it. There was zero difference. They had the exact same thickness. They had the exact same bevel. Everything was exactly the same because there was some black on it. Huh. So, oh yeah, thinning, the black is thinning. It's true. I really want you to experience that. So please come on out and just sit there and just listen to people talk about shape. It's amazing.
It sounds fun. And I've had the privilege of talking to different companies about it and their perspective on a lot of it. And I appreciate the idea that each company can have their own unique take on what is valuable and also incorporates into sound. And I know that shaping plays a role in feedback as well. So
absolutely, you
know, there's a benefit to all of it. I do want to ask you a couple more questions that are really targeted towards the 3D stuff. One of the things has to do with just overall application or utilization from players who you aren't currently staffed with. Are you seeing an uptick in that, especially from the tour irons?
Yes. As we get more of them out there, because I mean, sure, I told you they're out there, but I also, you know, told you the distribution is limited. So distribution is relatively limited at retail. They can be found. They're relatively limited at the tour level. You know, we're pumping these out as fast as we can, but they don't come out like baby rabbits. They're coming out like 3D printed irons. So yes, we're getting a lot more interest as the guys are getting more sets and they're getting them out there. Players like, I'm interested. I can't name some of the names because we don't have the name, image and likeness to be able to do that. But I'll tell you, there is a pretty significant amount of interest because they're looking over, they're like, dude, you switched, you know, and then of course we're on the tee and somebody's like at the range, let me hit that thing. And then they go hit up Ben. They go, hey, Ben, you know, I'd be interested, Ben Showman, I'd be interested in trying that. And we're getting the same thing over in Europe. We're getting more sets over to them and they're getting the same inquisitive, hey, what is that thing? Especially from players that, you know, if they're not under a heavy, heavy contract to play like more than 8 clubs in the bag. If they're just a, you know, driver, putter, glove guy or gal, they definitely would be interested. They can play whatever they want. And they're that good.
I'm curious, is this is this type of engagement that you're getting with the 3DP out on tour, is that more than you've seen in other items in the past? Is this showing better than a lot of your other products have in the past? And again, not from your staff.
I'm going to say yes. F9 driver got a lot of love.
As it should have.
Oh, yeah. LTDX, a lot of love. Some of the other drivers, fairways. We've got fairways in people's bags that are pretty prominent. Like, they're big blank people. You know, fill in the OEM name, and there's a couple Cobra clubs in that bag because they're that good. But in terms of the volume and the intensity of the interest, these clubs have the most that I've seen since I've been here. And honestly, they should. No disrespect to any of our stuff, because you know, you're going to hear me say it, we make really good stuff. Somebody walks in the hit bay at retail, grabs a Cobra driver, fairway hybrid, couple of irons, you're like, whoa, these are really good. Well, these irons are significantly bigger than just a whoa. They're like a holy shit.
These are
really, really good.
Well, actually, I've hit them and the King Tech, and it was really fun because you have numerous irons in the lineup that have that wow factor. Like those off the Tech, they pop, man. They pop big time.
And they do.
It's really fun because while I go to hit very specific iron, which is the 3D printed one, I'm sort of like just eating it up, just hitting bombs with this Tech, and it's like, it becomes a little more challenging when you have great options in the lineup to narrow it down and just focus on that, because you have so much fun in some of these other models. And I can see why people would absolutely wrap their head around that instead.
Oh yeah. Well, it's like, you just mentioned the Tech and the Tech X. I would say we hear from so many fitters is like, that thing's just a killer. Like if somebody has, enough height, right? Because there's a little stronger lofted, right? They have enough height and they've got a decent amount of club head speed, but they're looking for more distance. Nothing beats it. Like, you're going to get a significant amount of ball speed from that Tech X and the Tech, but really the Tech X. But that's why we make so many different types of irons, right? Mm-hmm. Like, one size does not fit all. And for a person who's just looking for just absolute pure distance, I don't know that the 3DP Tour is going to be the one for them, but I will say they got to give it a try, because with that low center of gravity, even though it doesn't have an unsupported face, I'm going to back up, doesn't have an unsupported face, which does give you a little bit more ball speed, but that low center of gravity is overwhelming to the ball impact. I mean, you get a lot more ball speed than expected from a solid iron. And the high moment of inertia, there's some serendipity there. We found with the F9 iron that we got more launch angle out of the high moment of inertia than we ever even remotely expected. I didn't think it would even be coupled, right? We knew we were going to get more ball speed from low CG. We knew we were going to get lower spin from low CG. We got more launch angle than expected. And we're like, there's a moment of inertia coupling thing here, which was really cool. That's why these irons are remarkable. It's got all of those things.
Yeah. Well, I just remember going to the Bay, and with my friend was there hitting the Tech to see if they would be the irons for him this year. And I'm playing the, can I get the 200 yards range game with my 7, which obviously is, you know, ridiculous. but then I moved to the 3D printed irons, and I'm like, how precision can I get? So I'm looking at my real numbers. This is more like the type of iron I would normally play. Cause we're all trying to play like in our world, right? We're not making big switches. We're usually in the realm. Player CV, player MB is closer to where I would normally play. So I'm hitting these tight little draws that are going about 180, 183. And I'm like, this is my window. I'm really enjoying this. I think I sent you pictures. I was like,
yeah,
this is too much fun. So it's always fun to get to that finite level of, once you land on something, how well can it perform for exactly what you're looking for it to do? And I think that lands on that player iron, because usually right now I'm not that eager to get into an MB. They're terrifying. They're hard to hit, especially with a 9-year-old. I'm not hitting the range 3 days a week. It's not happening.
No.
So, no. You know, I do have one more question. I know we're getting a little tight on time, but we've talked about material before, and there's a very specific type of material you need to use for these. Has that changed, or are you seeing any significant shift in potential for the future with 3D printed irons?
Yes, it has changed. And yes, there is potential. So we spent a lot of time working with 17-4, which is a relatively common stainless steel that is used in a lot of cast irons right now. Okay. We settled on 316L, a little bit better from a processing standpoint, a little better bendability. So one could say it probably feels a little bit better, but they both feel great. There are some other alloys now that Ryan Roach, who's leading the charge on this, is now really excited about. Because the printer and the printing, so somebody develops the printer machine, right? And then there's people that buy it and print with it. And some of these companies that develop the machines are offering manufacturing capacity. So we're dealing with both the printer developer and the printing companies. And they're looking at new alloys all the time because they get all sorts of crazy ass requests from companies, right? You got to remember, you got medical devices, implants, aerospace, automotive. The requirements from a temperature, durability, processability, machinability after the fact. Can you heat treat it? Can you chrome it? Do you have to chrome it? There's so many freaking requirements that come out of the woodwork for all these potential products that could be 3D printed. They're working on all sorts of alloys. And the super cool thing is you can do some crazy ass stuff with 3D printing that you can't do with casting and forging from a shape and a manufacturing standpoint, also from an alloy standpoint. You can mix some stuff that doesn't necessarily want to be mixed when you forge it or cast it. So That's way in the weeds. That's like, as they would say, inside baseball, right? Okay. It's not just the shape. It's also some alloys that are going to be remarkable.
Let me ask you the
super excited about that
$100 million question. Are you potentially looking to change the way that a golf club should sound?
For some, yes. That's a great question. For some categories, yes, absolutely. We're just going to leave it at that. Okay. Yeah. I won't leave it at that. It was really funny. Back to Gary Woodland. He hits these things and he goes, you know, I think these things sound better than my forged blades. And we quickly reverse engineered why that might happen. And if you give someone a club that sounds basically the same when they hit it right in the middle, okay? But then when you give them a lot more moment of inertia, so when you hit it out on the toe or in the heel, it's going to twist less. It's going to retain more ball speed. It's going to retain the proper spin. It's going to retain launch angle. It's just going to be a better shot. Well, in that impact, your impact's more efficient. It's not twisting as much. So it makes sense. The sound when you move out on the toe should be more similar to the center impact than it would be on a forged blade. So I'm like, well, yeah, that makes sense. After he hits 100 shots, he is probably going to turn around and go, you know, I don't know what it is, but this thing feels better. Well, that's why, Gary.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about, and I know I'm asking heavy stuff here. Can you alter the material depending on the point of the face that you're designing or building? So can you make the center of the head sound one way and change the type of material on toward the toe to have a similar sound profile as the center contact?
It's possible. Okay. And I'll go to the easier way to do it is just change thickness of the face, thickness of the lattice, locational lattice. That's how you'd probably do it right now. The reason being that it would be difficult to do what you just described is the way we're currently printing. If this is a head in the printer, they're printed by laying down a layer of powder and the laser sinters that. You lay down another layer of powder, laser comes in and sinters it, 2,600 layers, 24 hours. So right now, the way we're printing them, you could change the powder, right? But how would you actually do it and where would you do it as you're building it, okay? And I would also say right now, it's not practical in the printers we're using because the powder is loaded all at once. And it could be 1,000 pounds worth of powder. And you wouldn't change the powder in the middle of the print. But there are printing styles where you are like literally shooting the material and the energy required to melt it at the object that's being printed. With that one, you could change the powder. But then you would want to print it, let's say, in this orientation, right? Where you could lay down a layer of powder and then lay down a different layer of powder. Or if you really are shooting it on there, you're shooting it this way, and this has a different alloy than this area. So, very astute question. The answer is, yeah, it's possible. Not with our current methods, but sometime in the future, absolutely.
Feels kind of like one of those.
You smarty party.
Feels kind of like one of those when it happens type things. Like it,
yes.
Presumably. Yeah. Presumably, yeah. It's coming eventually.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I love the idea of it. I love that you're starting to get to talk about these types of things that you can't talk about in forging or casting in the same sort of
way. No, so, not even close.
I want to give you a chance. I know we need to wrap up. And I'm probably killing you on time here. Do you have any final thoughts for the folks who haven't really focused in on what's happening with 3D printing? Is there anything that you could give them a heads up on to let them know what they're missing out?
Well, like I said earlier, just find them. They're out there. Hopefully you don't have to drive 300 miles to hit it, right? If you have to drive 300 miles, give me a call. I will give you some spending money for pork rinds and a big gulp, okay? But it's worth hitting them. It's like Big Bertha driver, Pro V1 golf ball. You know, I'd like to believe anyone who can just, you know, put the club decently on the ball, they're going to notice something like pretty quick. They're like, wow, Yegley's right. This is a very different iron. I have personally witnessed chops hitting this thing and going, holy crap, what is this? Right. And they weren't just blowing smoke up my skirt. So I really encourage them to go find one and just hit them. And you may go, I'm not going to spend that much money on an iron. Okay, I got it. That's fair. But then there's going to be people that go, holy crap, this thing's so good. And I'm going to keep the set of irons for 5 years. Right. So over 5 years and 50 rounds a year, that's worth the investment. And I'm not going to tell my wife. I'm not going to tell her. Yeah. When she sees them, she goes, what are those? Oh, there's some irons. Oh, they're Cobras. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Just some irons. Yeah. Nothing. There's nothing to see here. Highly encourage them to try them. Because, right now, literally, we can't make them fast enough.
Really?
We really can't. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everything that's coming in is going out the door. Yes.
I'll tell you what. Normally, I outro. I think that lands it. It's always such a blast having you on, buddy. You are so interesting, and we always appreciate your insight, and it's fun to see what's coming out.
Thank you, Daniel. I love being with you. You're a good dude. Love, of course, the Hacker's Paradise. Can hardly wait to tee it up with my friends and defend this cup. So I appreciate your time, everything you do. What episode is this now? 250-something?
253, I believe. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're really good at what you do, and I appreciate it. Yeah.
Hey, if you guys are playing golf this weekend, have a great time. If you're messing around and it's raining on Saturday, go to your nearest store and see if they have some of these 3D printed irons. They are ridiculously fun to try. They are probably scary to look at, but see what happens. You never know. Maybe you got to hide something from your wife next week.
Who knows? Yeah. Hey, Mother's Day's gone and Father's Day's coming. It's fair. Coming. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Hey,
all right.
See you next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey, everybody. The professor of shaftonomics, Don Brown, Back here with you for another Shaft University. This week's question, how do you design for Project X and how do you design for True Temper and how are they different? So one of the main things with Project X is it always has a pretty stiff butt section. You can't see it, but if there were steps in this, you would see that the first step on a Project X shaft is usually around 10 inches or so down the shaft, whereas with a True Temper shaft, it's usually further up, sometimes 8 inches, 6 inches. It depends on the flex, but that's really the main difference between the True Temper and the Project X lines. Project X always has a really stiff handle. When we only had the blue Project X, that profile was really, really stiff throughout. Now that we have new products like the Project X Red and we have the LZ product, not nearly the same stiff shaft all the way through as the original was. So you can get some of the same performance benefits you might see with a project like DG Mid out of a project like Project X Red. Hope that answers your question. We'll see you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.